And this week we're exploring borders, the dividing lines that keep people out, but today, borders that keep people in. That's the sound that enchanted Kate Bush, Paul Simon, Frank Zappa, and frankly, me. But the people behind these voices were hidden for years behind the Iron Curtain, the ideological drape around the Soviet Union and its satellite states, their brick-and-mortar symbol being the Berlin Wall that separated East and West Germany. The Bulgarian state radio and television female vocal choir was first captured on tape in the 1950s by Swiss ethnomusicologist Marcel Sellier. A reworked album, Les Mystères des Voix Bulgaires, Mystery of the Bulgarian Voices, came to the U.S. in 1987 on Nonesuch Records. It was a sensation. But the choir couldn't come until the Iron Curtain began to lift in 1988, and their concert at Lincoln Center sold out. A follow-up album won a Grammy for Best Traditional Folk Album in 1989. But the lifting of the Iron Curtain may have been this group's temporary downfall, as we're about to hear. They faded from view, then in May released a new album collaborating with beatboxer Skiller and singer Lisa Gerrard of Dead Can Dance. Let's hear more. Jim Farber is a longtime music critic. He also teaches a course at NYU and joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. It's always nice to find another, you know, Bulgarian state women's choir groupie.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of people certainly from the 80s remember when the first one came out here, it sold, you know, over 500,000 copies. It was a gold album, and it made such an impression, I think, partially because this whole notion of what was first marketed as quote-unquote world music, you know, they really just began at that time between that album and Graceland, which came out around the same time. Really, those two albums were the first ones that opened up a lot of American ears and other people in the West to all these sounds from around the world. It was really the beginning of something huge.
Oh, it was amazing. And also the fact that you couldn't see them, you know, these these albums or copies of them were passed around, you know, in college dorm rooms. And it wasn't until, as we said, the Iron Curtain fell that they could come to the United States. And I remember the Lincoln Center concert where they first played. I mean, everyone, Paul Simon and everybody in music was there because they'd been waiting for years to see them.
Yeah, well, Paul Simon and a bunch of other musicians had actually first heard the choir from a 1966 recording. Frank Zappa heard it, Paul Simon heard it back then. And most importantly, I think David Crosby and Graham Nash, because they have never stopped talking about that record. If you see interviews with them today, if you see an interview like where they're on tour now, they will still mention that album as really important in influencing their harmonies, even though they use very different harmonies. But it opened up, I think, particularly David Crosby's ear. And certainly if you listen to some of David Crosby's stuff, you're not going to hear anything that sounds like the Bulgarian choir, but you will hear very unusual harmonies. And again, this does not sound like the Bulgarian choir, but it's interesting to see how he heard it and translated it into his own language.
This this is a different way of singing. It's not the Western way from the diaphragm.
It's not. I mean, it's not typical Western bel canto singing. When you talk to Lisa Gerrard, who is Australian, she said when she first heard these women and she tried to imitate them, she said, it almost broke my voice. You know, she really couldn't sing the way they were singing. It was coming from, you know, really kind of a different part of the body. I mean, different sort of harmonic structures, different ways of singing together, you know. It wasn't like a typical kind of call and response. In a way, a lot of times you'll hear the voices doing different things at the same time, so it's like there's multiple leads rather than just the typical lead and backup singer relationship that you'll hear more commonly in pop music.
And it's chest and throat and nose as opposed to deep in your diaphragm. But Kate Bush took a run at singing with them. She included several of the women on her songs. Let's listen to one. This is Rocket's Tail.
That November night, looking up into the sky, you said, hey, I wish I was beyond there. It's the biggest rocket I could find.
It's tingly. Jim Farber, I mentioned that it was so great when the Iron Curtain fell and we could see them, but it wasn't that great for the choir.
It's an important point. They were support, as right in the name, state TV and state radio. These women were very well known within the country. You know, I mean, they had this outlet of all the media and were supported from the 50s up until the fall of communism. And then once the communist government was collapsing, they were sort of on their own. And a lot of them had to go back to teaching and couldn't make full-time livings doing music. This is one of the problems that came after those hit records.
Well, there's an irony there because you reminded us that they were supported by the communist government, but a lot of their singing was subversive.
Well, it was, but it always had been. It wasn't new to that regime. In other words, it's common for folk musics around the world to have subversive messages. The lyric will appear to be a love song or about something that the townspeople do for a living. But it's really their messages there about power and about control. And all the people who are in with it, you know, who like get the messages and who really are the main audience for those folk musics, they get it, but the people in power don't.
Well, funding was found recently. This new record has been released, Bucci Mish, and again with Lisa Gerrard, Dead Can Dance. Let's listen to another piece, Para Satunda. So, Jim Farber, there's a beatbox there, and it isn't the original experience, but how would you describe it?
Well, you know, the man who really kind of helped put this together, the arranger and composer of a lot of these songs, Peter Dundakov, he composes all kinds of film music and electronic music in Bulgaria. He said they wanted to try to create a new kind of folk music, that they didn't want to just repeat what they had done. The original recordings were almost entirely a cappella. There's a lot more instrumentation on this. There's an instrument called a kaval, which is a flute kind of instrument, mainly from the mountains there, and a gadulka, which is a stringed instrument. As far as the beatbox goes, their feeling there, and I think they're on solid footing here, is that that happens in the mouth just the way all of these vocals are happening in the mouth. Mm. So they figure it's akin. And also hip-hop is a modern folk form.
Yeah. So there is that. We recommend people to the new release. But I would also say just go back while you're at it and get the originals. I was reading that the in the 1950s, early 1950s, when the first director of Bulgaria's state Ensemble for Folk Songs and Dances was asked by the government to put together this group that he borrowed from the impressionism of Claude Debussy and the 12-tone innovations of Arnold Schoenberg. This is complex music.
But it's also interesting that he reached out, and it also shows that the music was never, quote-unquote, pure. I don't know if any music ever really is. I mean, you know, all music is sort of a hybrid and should be. You know, it's dynamic, it changes. And even folk, which we think of as something traditional, that changes too. And I think that's one of the things that this project really wanted to highlight, that even folk music can progress.
Yeah. That's longtime music critic Jim Farber talking about Les Mystères des Voix Bulgares, the mysterious voices of Bulgaria. Jim, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Border Crossing Bulgarian Women's Choir. Tomorrow, how borders inspire books. It's here now.